The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs.
Hello, welcome back to the Inside Ellen Road podcast. We're well and truly into the crunch time period of the season, as Daniel Farke might say. Time to be cool in the head with fire in the heart as Leeds prepare to take on Middlesbrough, QPR and Southampton to finish the 2023-24 season. And I mean finish on May the 4th. None of this dilly-dallying with the playoffs, please. I've got annual leave to take. Graham, most importantly, will you be keeping the beard as the weather continues to warm?
That's a good question. I did loosely link the beard to Leeds United's unbeaten run because they began at the same time. You know, they got the same start in life in January. But since then, I've become quite fond of it again. I did have a beard until I joined the YEP, actually. I shaved it off the day before I started. So I haven't really decided yet what I'm going to do with it. I suppose that'll depend just how uncomfortable it is when the warmer weather hits, if the warmer weather ever does hit. But yeah, I haven't really given it that much thought, to be honest.
Well, yeah, if you were going to shave it off after Leeds' unbeaten run came to an end, then yeah, you'd probably have grown it back by now, considering how fertile your hair follicles appear to be. But yeah, Coventry, Sunderland, Blackburn, not the best fortnight for Leeds. Obviously, Blackburn being the most recent game, you predicted a 3-0 win. I predicted a 1-0 win, and it being a closer game. It was a close game, and ultimately Leeds came off on the wrong side of the result. Unbeaten record at home was squandered. And yeah, just an all-round disappointing couple of games.
Yeah, they're wobbling, aren't they? They're having a wobble at exactly the wrong time. Maybe it was unrealistic to expect that unbeaten run would just roll right through, you know. But the problem is, when you go on a run like that, when you do lose, it's going to be a thing. You know, it's going to be a big thing. Leeds have finally lost. The streak is at an end. But then you have to go on another one. That's just the harsh, unrelenting nature of trying to get promoted out of a division that has two other parachute payment teams, a team that are putting together an unbelievable season in Ipswich, and a whole host of teams who are going to be very, very worthy playoff candidates and will prove nightmarish in the playoffs. You simply have to bounce out of a defeat like that into a win, or into a draw, but then follow that with a win, and and then you're back on the right course. What you absolutely cannot do is wallow in the depths of despair and frustration. I suppose the saving grace is that everyone else, as they near the finishing line, is also experiencing tire blowouts, and like nobody wants to win it, do they? Nobody wants to cross the finish line first.
It's like three massive gargantuan spinning tops that are now beginning to come to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And you can sort of see them beginning to go.
Yeah.
What would you describe Southampton in that scenario then? Because they've come back with a vengeance.
They're a Beyblade. Somebody has unleashed a Beyblade in amongst the spinning tops.
Very good. Yeah.
Threatening to wipe them all out. It would be remarkable, wouldn't it, if they... I thought they were out of it. I've thought a lot of things this season that have then proven to be false, but I thought they were out of it, and they're not.
No, they've... I mean, that Preston game, I mean, besides the fact that Preston did appear to roll over, they were ruthless, and they were doing what the other three teams, as in Leeds, Leicester and Ipswich, have just been unable to do in the past couple of games, and that's just... Let's take the lead, for starters, and then sustain a lead and then add to it, which has been, you know, throughout this season, has just been par for the course for these three teams. you know, they've gone ahead in games, and that has been that. The stats back that up. You know, Leeds have won, I think it's 7 or 8 games this season, which the last time I checked was the most in the division. 7 or 8 games by a margin of 3 goals or more, which, you know, just shows that their dominance and their ability to, you know, keep their feet on the throat of the opponent. But I mean, the story of the last couple of games has been facing a low block, not being able to break them down, and, you know, the opposition growing in confidence because they think, you know what, 70 minutes, we're still in this game. We can go and get a winner, which is obviously the tail of the tape against Blackburn. Sammy Smodic, you know, 30 goals all competitions this season. You can't give him that much space. I know it was on the counter. I know it was sort of Leeds were in defensive transition, but you can't give him that much space for him to find the back of the net, because he has just been scoring goals like that all season.
Yeah, he was just left alone, wasn't he? Ultimately, Blackburn are a very ordinary team with a very special player in attack. You know, they have a couple of good players like this. Let's not be too disparaging. I mean, that ball put through by Dolan, was it, for the assist for the goal was tremendous. But I mean, let's break the goal down. It's one goal kick, one long goal kick. Gallagher gets the run on Rodon to get the flick on. And it's almost like that one moment has completely undone the Leeds defence, because Rodon's pulled out of there. Byram gets pulled all the way from right to almost left by Dolan, but doesn't affect him, doesn't win the individual duel, doesn't stop him from turning to play that pass. Archie Gray is tucked inside as well, as in towards the other side. He's central mid. Ampadu can't really do anything about it. And that one pass has just unlocked them. And Smodic is in. And once he was in, I think everyone in the stadium knew he's going to put this away. So that's what he's been doing relentlessly this season. He's a goal machine. Maybe it's recency bias, maybe it's seeing him on the Saturday, but I went into Sunday's EFL Awards thinking, surely he's done enough. The context of 30 goals in a season for this Blackburn side is remarkable. You know, first man to do it since Shearer did it for them. Surely that's enough for EFL Player of the Season. But then he came out on the losing side of that one. It was bitterly disappointing from Leeds. And it begs the question, who's going to stand up now? They've been shut out twice. You know, an attack that has been lauded all season long by opposition managers, a Premier League attack. How many times have we heard that they've got Premier League players up front? Everyone calls Somerville a Premier League player. Premier League athleticism, Routier, they call a Premier League player. Nyonto, they'd probably call him a Premier League player too.
He's an Italian international, the youngest player ever to score for Italy. You've got Dan James, 50 on caps for Wales.
Dan James has more pace than almost anyone in the division. He'd probably be right up there, wouldn't he, for the quickest in the league. And Jadon Anthony, who came from a Premier League club on loan. And then you've got Patrick Bamford, scored 17 in a Premier League season. So there's a reason why opposition managers have been saying this all season, other than just deflecting from their own team's problems.
Do you think there's been an issue with how Farke has set the team up against low blocks this season? Because I've seen a lot of it is head loss because of the circumstances. A lot of it is, you know, very reactionary. And I think, you know, it's important in our role that we simply don't react in the same way, because you need to look at the bigger picture. You need to, you know, consider that there are other factors at play. But do you think that the approach when facing low blocks, you know, I'm thinking particularly when Leeds are chasing a game, perhaps when they're 1-0 down, you know, bringing on every available attacker and basically congesting that middle of the park whilst sort of maintaining the width with the fullbacks and the wingers, is that something which do you think it works?
Well, I don't know. I guess the problem we have is that Leeds have been in control of so many games this season that it really stands out when they're not in control of a game and they're chasing it. And those examples are not, there's not masses of them, but the ones that we've seen, a picture starts to emerge. Now, whether it's a completely fair picture or not, I don't know, but it's a picture that's there. I think back to Stoke away, Rotherham away, Sunderland at home, Coventry away was probably another example, and of course Blackburn. And there are other other examples as well. Coventry at Elland Road, in fact, Sunderland away from home. Those games were not all entirely the same. You know, there's different varying degrees of chances created and chances missed and mistakes made at the other end, perhaps. But again, let's talk about the Blackburn game. It didn't feel to me like a goal was coming. It felt like Somerville was being pretty much controlled. Controlled as well as I've seen him controlled for most of this season. Crosses into the box were simply not going to yield a goal. Mm. It wasn't happening. Probably should have done. Bamford should have scored that header, I think, just as he should have scored from a cross against Coventry. And maybe we're having a completely different conversation. But he's not in form. Nobody's stepping up with the bit of magic that the person that looked likeliest actually was Willy Nyonto, and he couldn't last the full 90. But the picture that you got from the last stage of that game was Leeds with a whole load of attackers on the pitch, Archie Gray alone in midfield, and no real sign of them breaking Blackburn down. You know, congested is the right word. That in and around the penalty area was just bodies. So Routaire couldn't do it. And got hauled off. And after that, you look at the squad and you think, well, who is going to create that bit of space to slot someone through and play someone in behind? And I don't know if Leeds had that player on the pitch. I don't know if they had that midfielder on the pitch. I don't know if they had space for anyone to do that on the pitch. And then when the ball went wide, yeah, it got crossed into the box a few times, but to no real avail. And it was, I do kind of agree with people who said it was predictable. It was predictable. You knew the ball was going to go wide and you knew it was going to get whipped into the box. There was no variation. I don't know if there was a possibility for a variation.
Is there an argument to say that Leeds don't actually have that midfield player? Or at least they don't have that midfield player playing in midfield?
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at, you know, progressive passes. Progressive passes defined as, you know, a complete pass that moves the ball towards the opponent's goal at least 10 yards from its furthest point in the last six passes. Basically, it's a forward pass. You know, the line-breaking passes that we've seen players make for, you know, decades that you know, get slip someone in behind. You know, it's not from the goalkeeper. It's not within the defending 40% of the pitch. It's from a position where you can tell the value of that pass. You know, it's the one which makes you sit up and go, right, we're on the attack now. Leeds don't really have that player, at least not playing in midfield. Because you look at the numbers in the Championship this season, you've got Matt Grimes, again, a player that Leeds fans will be familiar with. He is someone who has got recorded over 300 progressive passes. Dan Neil at Sunderland. Norwich's Gabriel Sara. You know, he's one of the best players in the division, and he's very good at that. Named in the Championship Team of the Year. Kenny McLean, who is somebody who Leeds have been linked with in the past. Harry Winks and Keenan Dewsbury Hall, both of Leicester, both making a lot of progressive passes. And you have Sam Morsy as well of Ipswich. You have to go all the way down to 16th until you reach Ethan Ampadu with 219. He's Leeds' first representative, if you will, in that department. And he's been playing in defence, and it is technically easier to make a progressive pass if you're a defender because your starting position is deeper. So you're under less pressure, theoretically. And then you come down to Glenn Kamara, who's 23rd in this list, and he's got 201 progressive passes, pretty much played, I mean, 30 90s worth of games this season. I just don't think they've got that, as you've been saying, that person to slide them in. Or at least not to the same standard as others in the league, which does make things a problem when teams decide to set up in a low block and really, you know, set up to frustrate, because you are doing, you know, all of that horseshoe passing, and it's going round and around, and you ultimately end up relying on someone like Somerville for a bit of magic, And it's not, you know, he's not always going to produce that. When he does, it's great, but it's not a guarantee. So I think that's, I mean, we can come on to this, but you were suggesting, is it necessary that Leeds maybe bring Ampadu into the midfield to sort of exploit that progressive passing, that he can be that player? I don't know, you know, do you sacrifice defensive solidity for that?
Yeah, it's a real conundrum, and I was thinking about it this morning, and I thought, you know, what if they put Ampadu back into midfield and had him and Gray next to one another? You know, bags of energy between the two of them, bags of running, defensively very sound, I would imagine, but with a fair bit of passing ability and forward passing ability between the two of them. Archie Gray can dribble it as well, but that means you can't play Ampadu at centre-back, and Ampadu and Rodon have really been the bedrock of what Leeds' challenge has been built on since January. You know, that those two, the consistency, the partnership, the understanding, the covering for one another, taking that away is a gamble. And it's, I don't know if we're at, well, I suppose if we're not at gambling territory now, then when will we ever be? But I almost feel like Farker would rather draw these games and go into the playoffs with a team that still knows what it's doing, knows that it's got the parts in place and knows its roles and who's going to be playing where. It's stable, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for, rather than experiment now and things go horribly wrong and then they crash into the playoffs in chaos, nobody knowing who's going to start on a Saturday and where they're going to start and, you know, what that would likely bring. It's a really difficult one, because Ampadu and Rodon have been good for me, really, really good. And it's almost like, I think we probably said it before, you want two Ampadus, you want one in the midfield and you want one in defence. But you can't split the boy in two, can you?
No, you can't. And I suppose this is where you miss Pascal Struijk, because he is somebody who is very good at progressing the ball from centre-back.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why Daniel Farke has reiterated that it is a disappointment, you know, not having him available for the remainder of the season. But ultimately, that's a decision which has been made, and you know they've got to, you know, react and adapt to it. Just throw me off there a little bit on the video if you're watching this, Graham. It appears you have the same mug as me.
I very much doubt it, because mine.
No, as in the same design.
Oh yeah, go on, show me your mug.
No, it's in the cupboard. Actually, okay. Hold on. Put that close to the camera.
I'm just trying to make sure that none of the bad words.
All right. Okay. No, that's completely different. Mine has a lot of football shirts on it. I thought they were, from there, I thought they were football shirts.
No, mine says letters. Things like keeper lit, sure it'll be grand, wind your neck in, your boy ye, dead on.
What about you?
So it is. What about you? I write stuff like that. Just in touch with my roots, very in touch with my.
Do you look at that mug every morning just so you can kind of, you know, play up to the stereotypes?
Yes.
Keep yourself fresh.
We haven't had a pod, had we, since Stuart Dallas's retirement?
No, we haven't. No. Obviously, we recorded last Wednesday, I believe, and that was when that afternoon was when it was all announced. Obviously, a very moving halftime against Blackburn, with him coming onto the pitch with his family. You know, great reception from Elland Road. Can't imagine that there'll have been too many pints sold or burgers consumed in the concourse, as everybody was obviously very keen to, you know, to show their respect for Dallas and what he's done for the club. I mean, what do you make of the situation? I know people might think, okay, it's time to move on, but he definitely deserves a segment on this podcast, considering that, you know, you are the Northern Irish representative now of Leeds United.
I think Charlie Allen might have something to say about that. It was very, very sad. We knew that we were going up to Thorpe Arch last Wednesday afternoon, and we had an inkling of what it would be, but Leeds didn't confirm until I think they just I think they wanted to allow Stuart to announce it in the way he wanted to, which was with a club announcement and a letter to the fans. And so they held off on telling the players, because players then talk to family members, players talk to agents, people talk as they do, and then suddenly it's out there and it's being announced on Twitter before he gets a chance to say it. So they put together the announcement, we got that under embargo, and then we went up to Thorpe Arch to interview him, and you could sense, you know, how emotional the day had been. We were told that he'd had a meeting with the team and that had been really hard, and we spoke to him about that, and he said he'd been dreading that. In fact, when he came and sat down, he said, go easy on me today, boys, I'm a bit fragile. And I've never ever seen Stuart Dallas in kind of that emotional a state. He's always one of those that will have something to say that is likely mocking you, or
what, like perhaps calling you upside down head.
No, he would never say that. Like when we're in Spain and I was trying to record a Facebook Live to keep the bosses happy for digital engagement, and Dallas happened to come across and was saying stuff like, "Who's he talking to there?" loudly in the background. And he would always like say, "Oh, the vultures are here," when we arrived at Thorpe Arch, quite correctly categorizing journalists as what we are. But he wasn't. He was still kind of. He was still Stuart Dallas, and he was still in good form. But you could sense that he was very emotional, and his reasoning for retiring is perfectly understandable after the kind of grueling 2 years that he's had. It has been nightmarish. I think others would have. I don't use like terms like gone under, but I don't think they'd have quite been able to keep going as relentlessly as he did through that rehab and through the 7 surgeries without completely losing their heads, because he's been denied doing what it is that he loves to do. And as a footballer, especially when you're not able to do that, you just feel like a bit of a spare part around the club. You're just stuck in the monotony of in the gym again today. You know, you don't even get out on the grass for most of it. So he's really been through it. And, you know, I think the most striking thing that he said for me was that at some point the goal changed from getting back to playing football to just being healthy and mobile, I think, is the implication for life after football, because he's a young man, he's got a young family, and the focus became, and that's how serious the damage was from this collision, that you're really talking about, will he be up and around, you know, never mind chasing after championship defenders this season, will he be mobile enough for everyday life? And that really brings it home, I think. You know, we would often get people getting a bit frustrated because we hadn't asked about Dallas, because I think they were clinging to a hope that he would reappear. I just don't think it was going to happen. You know, when he got back to team training, I think that was maybe another marker along the road to retirement, that what he would need, or where he would need to get to be able to compete, was just beyond his body's capability. So, very, very sad. But it was pleasing that the club dealt with it the way they did and gave him that chance at halftime. I was a bit concerned, actually, that the people would head out and it wouldn't kind of get the same reception than if he did it before the game. But I think people did him justice, didn't they? And maybe that was never in doubt, you know, that people have hold him in such high esteem that they wanted a chance to say thanks and not quite goodbye, because he's still around for the rest of the season, and I imagine he'll be around in the Leeds United sphere for a long, long time. But it was a nice moment on Saturday.
It feels almost like, I imagine for Dallas, that like a weight has been lifted, because he's got this off his chest. You know, watching back through the interviews that have been put out, And from, you know, listening to your chat with him and the rest of the Leeds press pack, you know, he does genuinely sound as though he is grateful that he is able to, you know, to just be walking around. And that, again, as you say, that paints a picture as just to how horrific the injury must have been. And, you know, when he's been very forthright in saying, you know, if, yeah, he turns 33 next month or whatever, if even if he was 21, he wouldn't have been able to carry on, you know, just because of the nature and the complexities of the issue. And yeah, it's been, I don't know, it has been apparent for some time that would be the case. But, you know, I think we have to commend the club in the way that they dealt with it, as you said, because that there's a right way to do things like that. And I think they got the tone absolutely spot on.
I mean, this wasn't him. Do you remember the reaction when they did the t-shirts, you know, after after he had the injury? You know, there was a lot of kind of people very, very cynical, I suppose, is one word to put it, about that gesture. It just wasn't quite the right thing. This, however, felt right. And relief, I think you're spot on there with relief, because I suppose if this has been in the back of his head for a long time, it's something that he'll have been wrestling with and agonizing over and holding off and hoping that it wouldn't come to this, and thinking, I'll give it one more shot. I'll give it another shot. I'll give it a bit longer. I suppose that battle's now done in his head, and he can now start to focus his energy on what next, you know, rather than thinking, what if, it's what next. He's already, I mean, yesterday he was doing the draw for the under 19 Euros, wasn't he, for Northern Ireland. And I imagine he's got a few ideas of things that he'll want to do and a few possibilities. I know Michael O'Neill at Northern Ireland absolutely loves him to bits, just as he does Steve Davis. And Steve Davis was almost instantly involved in the Northern Ireland backroom staff as soon as he retired. He was part of the group, part of the coaching group for the last international break and for the Scotland game. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see Dallas involved in some sense with Northern Ireland. Equally, could you see him going down the coaching route at Thorpe Arch? It's a possibility. Leeds are discussing with him a potential role. I think at the very least he'll have an ambassadorial role, won't he?
Yeah.
That'll be available to him if he so wants that.
Said at the beginning, you know, as you said, he is somebody with bags of personality. You know, he does fit that ambassadorial role like a glove. And yeah, at the very least, he'd be able to do that. And I think, you know, as well, from a coaching perspective, you know, few players have had a route to the top, to the Premier League, to European championships, quite like him. So in terms of imparting wisdom and, you know, knowing what's required to go that extra yard, you know, to take your own game to the next level, as he did under Bielsa, there are very few who are going to be able to, who are better placed than Stuart Dallas to be able to, you know, speak to the next generation of players at Thorpe Arch. So I think there's a lot of options open to him. And I do think, you know, as you say, that the future is very positive for him. He can put this chapter to one side. He has had an excellent career, playing career, that is. But, you know, who's to say he can't go on and do, you know, even more with an association to Leeds. And I think that's something which a lot of fans will take solace from as well.
Yeah. You know, when you think about the career he's had, you know, he didn't have the luxury of an academy upbringing. Part-time footballer, part-time joiner before he came across to England. And but it's Bielsa, isn't it, that's the key to Stuart Dallas actually reaching the height that he did. He was a very, very talented player, Stuart Dallas, and there's no doubt that he was a good player before Bielsa came. But what Bielsa transformed him into by putting those demands on him for the physicality that was required, you know, for either fullback or for centre mid or left back or wing or wherever he played him. And Dallas really bought into that. And I think one without the other wouldn't have worked. You know, had Dallas not been willing to, like Cooper, ditch the alcohol that summer when Bielsa came in to get themselves into the shape they needed to be in to play his football, then he wouldn't have been the player he was. And equally, had Bielsa not had a group of players who were actually willing to say, you know what, we'll subject ourselves to this madness and we'll do the sacrifice in order to make ourselves the machines that we need to be, then Leeds wouldn't have had the success they did. It needed the genius of Bielsa and his unbelievable demands, and it needed the attitude of in the dressing room. And Leeds just so happened to have a dressing room that had that kind of character in it, and Dallas was one of those. And then the result was just, I mean, it was sensational, wasn't it? When you think of some of the moments that Dallas was involved in and the team that he was involved in. And the Man City thing is something that no one will ever be able to take from him. I mean, he was talking about how his sons were showing him those goals on the iPad last week. Yeah. And my personal highlight of that game was that we were sat directly behind the Man City bench, and Kyle Walker and Benjamin Mendy were, it's really hard to describe, but they were like hyenas. You know, Man City were piling on the pressure and they were like squealing and like comically screaming. And you could tell that they fully expected their teammates to score a goal. Like, it was almost like fun to them. It was almost like training to them. They were, you know, watching their pals in training. And when Dallas sprinted away and Alioski found him, and John Stones, Leeds had basically said, let Stones have the ball and carry it, and then we'll engage him 35 yards from goal. Stones had done a lot of running in that game and a lot of ball carrying and had a lot of influence. And he couldn't stick with Dallas. Like, he couldn't get to the ball to make it, to affect a challenge on Dallas. And so Dallas got to the area. He stuck the ball in the net. He wheeled away. And Mendy and Walker and everyone else on the Man City bench just shut up. Like, they were just silenced. And it was just, it was an incredible moment. Just the sheer balls of it to say, we're not going to cling to this 1-1 draw, and I'm not going to sit in and be hard to beat. I'm going to go and win this. Was just absolutely incredible for me. And that embodied that entire period under Bielsa, that entire season in the Prem where they finished top half. And a lot of players have very, very, very good careers, but never have a highlight, like a personal highlight like that, yeah. Scoring two goals at the Etihad against the champions and beating them with 10 men for a lot of that game. It's just something that a lot of people won't be able to say. And European Championships as well is just, I know how much it meant to me to watch Northern Ireland in a major champion, in a major tournament. First one since 86. I was 3 in 86 and lived all my life up to then with a couple of near misses, but most of the time thinking, this is summer international football is just not for me. It's not going to be for me. Like, I'm just going to have to pick a team that I quite like and follow them and, you know, hope that England gets to the quarterfinals and lose on penalties and all of that. And yet there we were in 2016 and doing things as well. It was just,
I remember that Ukraine game. That was great. When was it? McCauley scored in the last minute or in stoppage time or whatever.
McCauley with a big stupid header. Yeah. But, wasn't there another goal in that game? Didn't Dallas take a shot from outside the area? And then McGinn, it might've been stuck in the rebound. I think we might have won that game 2-1. Or was that Hang the on. First
oh,
goal?
You're doing a disservice. Actually, that game was 2-0. Yeah, it was 2-0. McGinn. It was McGinn in the 96th minute who scored. Yeah, and it was McCauley in the 49th.
Yeah, Dallas, Olga McGinnis, one of Dallas's best friends, came out the corner with like a lovely turn, beat a defender. The kind of thing you just almost wouldn't expect from a big kind of lumbering centre forward. He pulls the ball back. Dallas takes a shot from the edge of the area. Keeper palms it out. McGinn's there to stick it in. Just sheer ecstasy.
It was like that tournament was incredible for those weird turns or fantastic turns by players you wouldn't expect. Do you remember Hal Robson-Kanu doing that against Belgium? He just basically sent the entire Belgium defence
the wrong way.
He sent them packing in the opposite direction. Yeah. That was incredible. That was a great tournament. That was really, really good.
Wasn't so good that we lost to Wales, I have to say, to an own goal as well. Like, I didn't enjoy that. But the tournament, even just qualifying, it was like sitting down to watch your favourite thing, because international summer football is the best thing in the sport. It just, the World Cups are the best thing in the sport. So sitting down to watch one in the middle of the day or whatever it was, and it's actually your country and your team that you put on a pedestal and love beyond all other things in the sport, just amazing. So Dallas and every other player who made that happen, they have a very, very special place in Northern Irish people's hearts, I think.
Which group are Northern Ireland in at this year's Euros?
So, shall we talk about Middlesbrough then?
Oh man, it never gets old. I'll tell you what, in the nature of just, you know, having a bit of joshing, do you think that with obviously the relationship that Liam Cooper and Stuart Dallas have together, can you imagine the ribbon that Cooper got in the dressing room after they won 2-1 at Man City from Dallas, being like, you got sent off, you put us right in it, and I had to go and salvage something. I got 2 goals for the boys.
Yeah.
He will never, ever hear the end of that. And yeah. I tell you what, I think he's probably glad.
Those two have a very, very special relationship, don't they? That video, yeah. I don't know, even if you are the most cynical, hardened Liam Cooper hater in the world, and he does have his critics, he has lots of them, and some of them I think go way beyond what is reasonable given what he's achieved at Leeds, but that video of him standing up next to Dallas, who was struggling to get his words out because of the tears as he was telling the team, and then, you know, standing next to him in support, is just, that goes beyond the kind of, you know, when people say, I'll get on really well with everyone, I'll get on with all the boys are great. It goes so far beyond, it's that's genuine friendship, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not teammate camaraderie anymore, is it?
It's not. It's beyond that. And Dallas says that Cooper is more like a brother to him than a pal. And I think Liam was quite emotional again on Saturday, standing at the tunnel applauding as Stuart did his lap of honour. And then they had a big embrace. It's nice, actually, when you see a player go through something like what Stuart has gone through and the retirement that he's going to go through, it is good to know that they've got a good support network around them. And that's, I think that's a great comfort to anyone who has hold Dallas in any kind of affection.
Yeah, so I mean, you've turned this into the Northern Ireland podcast, but we'll move on to back to Leeds United.
What we should do is a breakout podcast every other week inside Windsor Park podcast.
Oh man, no, we're not doing that. You know, in fact, you know what? Because of how many times you like to tell people that you are actually the host on this podcast. Do you want to do the hosting and the editing and the producing and, you know, doing all the clips? You can do that for Windsor Park, or inside Windsor Park.
Well, we'll talk about that. But
okay, well, yeah, I'm sure
I'll let you introduce the next bit.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about that. Like when you bump into someone that you haven't seen in ages, you don't really want to spend any time with them one-on-one, but you say, yeah, we'll catch up. Just drop me a message. Yeah, we'll catch up. And then that message never comes and you are relieved. Right, next section of the podcast. I'm not really sure how to follow that. That was a nice little segment. Middlesbrough on Monday night. I mean, which team do you play? If you had to go 1 to 11 right now, you know, I don't want to hear any explanations as to why, you know, not too much chin stroking. I just want to know that you're 1 to 11 for Monday night.
Okay. Melier, Roberts, Firpo, Cooper, Rodon, Ampadu, Gray, Nyonto, Somerville, Ruter, Joseph.
Oh, okay. Right. Interesting. Very interesting. I'm going to go with Melier, Roberts, Ampadu, Rodon, Firpo, Gruev, Gray, Somerville, Nyonto, Ruter, and Joseph as well.
Yeah, I can't argue.
I'm keeping Ampadu at centre half. I just think.
Yeah, your team's better. Actually, I should have had Gruev. I've literally thrown. I've thrown.
Do you mean? Do you mean in real life as well?
No, I just mean. Yeah, my head's gone, and I've thrown Gruev out with the bathwater, haven't I?
And I've
And I've
What's he ever done to you, apart from giving you nice?
I've not held in mind his significant influence for the team. I've probably done him a massive disservice, but I don't know. Sometimes I think, just wouldn't it be exciting if something different happened? You know?
Yeah, I'll tell you what would be exciting. If Leeds had won the last couple of games and this was all wrapped up and we could, you know, go into the last three games with, you know, no anxieties, and, you know, I could, you know, go into the Algarve in May, you know, when the playoffs are on, and just watch from sort of a little beachside cabana and just think, ah, that could have been us, but it's not. I'm here instead. Instead, there's the likelihood that, you know, Leeds are going to be at Carrow Road, for example. Like, I don't want to be in Norwich. I don't want to go to Norwich, Graham. I said it four times. Okay.
I know. And it's 12:30 kickoff on a Sunday as well. It couldn't really be any worse. Yeah. It's really hard to know what's going to happen, isn't it? I mean, you'll have lots of people very, very confidently predicting that Leeds are going to blow this and they're not going to finish in the top two. That's a very easy position to take, because you're not going to look like a mug if Leeds finish in the top two, because you're going to be part of the celebrations. You're going to be absolutely over the moon that you were wrong, and you'll probably put out a funny tweet, well, how wrong was I? So glad to be wrong. If you take the other position and say confidently, Leeds are going to finish second. Leeds are going to finish in the top three because they're going to return to the form that kept them unbeaten for 3 months, and that relentless win, you know, 13 out of 15 wins, and they're going to, all it's going to take is to get the first goal against Borough and they'll be set, and everyone else's wobbles will continue and Leeds won't. That really puts you out on a limb, because when you predict something good is going to happen, if it happens, no one really cares or remembers. They're too busy getting hammered. If it doesn't happen, you look like an absolute twerp and everyone will be queuing up to tell you. So it's a much safer position to adopt, the negative position, I think. That's why a lot of people assume it, because it's more comfortable, and it probably feels more comfortable as well when the club has actually, outside of the Bielsa period, had just so much disappointment. Easier not to get hurt, isn't it, if you expect the worst? But
yeah, I mean, the Leeds' record in the playoffs is obviously very, I don't know, what would you say?
Very Leeds.
Very Leeds.
When I was at the EFL Awards on Sunday night, I was chatting to my counterpart at Ipswich, and I get the feeling that they, out of the top four, they're the ones with the least pressure and expectation. They're the one with the least number of fans doing their nut, I think, at this recent wobble.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody expected them to be here. Maybe Kieran McKenna did, and a few of his players. But I think if you asked Ipswich fans, you know, right back at the start of the season, like when Leeds beat them, were they really thinking, we're going to be leading it, you know, with three games to go, we're going to be at the front of the wagon. I don't think they would have believed that. I really don't. And therefore, they find themselves in a position where, yeah, they've dropped a few points lately, but they're still right in there with the possibility of making this an unbelievable season. Whereas Leicester have been unhappy for ages. Like, we had, even during their good times, we had friction between the manager and the fans. Leeds had it good for so long, and now that at this point everything's a bit shaky, people are in panic, full-blown panic mode, and could be sent into full-blown meltdown mode on Monday night if Borough beat them. So I think Ipswich are in like the prime emotional state of the teams. Maybe Southampton, you could argue, but there's expectation on them too, you know, because they were relegated. They have some very, very good players in that squad and very experienced players, and probably should be in the top three, really, shouldn't they, mm-hmm. with the squad they've got. So I would say Ipswich have it best right now.
Right. I mean, they're top of the table, so I'm curious as to how you came to that conclusion.
What I'm saying is they're not feeling the pressure of being chased, are they? They're not thinking, oh, bloody hell, we're top. Like, we might throw this away. That's not the mindset.
Well, no, because they've not been up into the Premier League for, what is it, near enough 20-odd years. And I think it's more than 20 years. So they don't really know what they're missing out on, sort of thing. Whereas another season in the Championship, it's not the end of the world for them. Certainly not financially. Everything's coming up Ipswich as long as they, you know, are able to win some of their last games, which are, if I'm not mistaken, Hull, Coventry and Huddersfield. Should be interesting. Do you want to talk about those games or do you want to talk about the remaining games or do you want to tell us how you got dolled up to the nines at the EFL Awards and who you managed to speak to, who you networked with, who you mingled alongside, whether you were whether you were rubbing shoulders with your great friend in broadcasting, Ian Broadcast Moose. Well, I don't even know what his surname is. From TalkSport.
Is it Abraham?
Yes, Ian Abrahams. You're a very good friend, of course. Let the record show that Graham is a huge fan of his work. What was the EFL Awards like at the Grosvenor House Hotel in London? Did you, in fact, this will tell me how much of an occasion you thought it was. Did you wear your specs or was it a contact lens night?
Oh, no, my contacts are reserved solely for Monday night football. so I don't wear them. Yeah, it was a good do. I mistakenly had the impression that, you know, it'd be a big ballroom. It was a big ballroom, but my impression was that like the journalists would have like an area or a table or whatever, and then maybe a little room to the side to interview, to take people and interview them after they won. So that, you know, you're part of the event, not in the event, but part of the event. I mean, I guess I should have read the signs when it said the dress code is black tie for the event. Note, black tie is not necessary for working journalists, for working media. I should have, I mean, it said like no trainers or whatever, but I should have got the memo. Also, can we ever just put an end to ambiguity in dress codes? Because then I'm thinking, well, do journalists even wear suits? Do they just go with a shirt? Do they wear tuxedos anyway? Will it look pretentious if you turn up in a tuxedo? Or will you look like you stand out like a sore thumb if you don't? Had all that insecurity going on. In the end, just went for a suit with a tie, black suit with a tie, dark purple tie. Looked great, to be honest. And then other journalists were similarly attired, like, you know, jacket and shirt with an open collar or a suit, but not a tuxedo. However, we weren't kind of in the, you know, on the floor in the ballroom. We were in a side room, kept well away from the real stars, from the real guests, I think, with a great big lanyard that said media, just so that everyone knew to steer clear of us if they saw us in the mingling periods.
You know what it reminded me of when you were telling me what it was like? It was, I don't know if anyone's seen the US Office, it's one of the later series when Dwight becomes, and it's a spoiler, if you are watching the US Office, pause now and skip the next 30 seconds. It's when Dwight becomes regional manager and he's trying to hire some of his friends and they're all these freaks and geeks and weirdos, you know, all the farm types, like his cousin Moe's and that sort of thing. And they're all sequestered in the conference room and the rest of the office staff are kind of just peering through the window and like, what on earth is going on in there? That is what I imagined you and the rest of the working press were like at that event. You know, everybody else glammed up and they were just like, oh God, the journalists haven't got the memo. Like some of them are wearing trainers. They're not the Axel Arigatos, you know, that every manager seems to wear on the touchline.
It wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all, Joe. It was useful to have a room, though, because that was where players were brought. And actually, I have to say, the EFL were incredibly efficient at grabbing award winners and bringing them straight to us and delivering them for interview. Didn't manage to deliver me Jorginho Ruter, though, who wasn't minded to come and have a chat. But we did manage to speak to Archie Gray.
Speaks to me, mate. Sorry. Me and Georginia, we've got an agreement.
I actually thought on the way, I was thinking on the way home, this has been quite a good season in terms of YEP access to players. Far, far better, I think, than last season on a couple of other seasons. Like, I was thinking about it. Between us, we've spoken to Melier, we've spoken to Roberts, we've spoken to Rodon, Ampadu, Firpo, spoken to Gray, spoken to
Kamara.
Gruev and Kamara, spoken to Somerville, spoken to Rutter, spoken to Joseph.
Yeah. I did. Yeah.
That's the guts of the squad.
Give us Bamford, give us Nyonto. Come on. Wonder what we could possibly ask.
On the night we spoke to Gray, winner of Young Player of the Year and Apprentice of the Year. Presumably he's done a really good job of cleaning the senior pros' boots this season to get that ladder award. Or sweep in the dressing room, or whatever it is they expect of apprentices these days.
He wasn't allowed to sweep the dressing room.
Unlikely to be those. Couldn't even be in the dressing room. Very, very deserved Young Player of the Season award. I felt absolutely certain he would win it.
Yeah.
Because no one else of his age is really having that good and that involved of a season, are they?
No.
So, yeah. And it was actually quite nice to see him a little bit out of his comfort zone. Like his voice was still shaking a bit, which he readily admitted when he came down to speak to us, having been on the stage. Because I guess it is like a very, very different environment for him. You know, he runs out and plays football in front of 36,000, but he's always played football. He hasn't always got on stages in front of his peers, you know, in his division and some, you know, TV celebrities or sports pundits or whatever, whoever the guests of honor were. And it was a different environment for him, but he handled it as he generally seems to handle most things in life. And he said some good stuff and he was very, very appreciative of the award. You know, for those who think that they don't matter, I think Archie Gray really quite enjoyed the fact that he won those two. And then we spoke to Somerville, who of course was Championship Player of the Season. I think my position on that would be, Joe, and you can argue this if you like, he's the best player in the division, but he hasn't, to my mind, had the best season in the division. I think that goes to Smodix.
No, that's fair. That's a reasonable way to put it. He is the best player, but yeah, he's not. He hasn't. I mean, being involved in 25 goals is still a pretty good year. But yeah, Smodix has obviously done very well, and also Adam Armstrong as well. You know, he's involved in 32, 33 goals for Southampton. Again, not bad going. But yeah, I'll tell you what, with you saying Archie's voice was sort of trembling a little bit as he came down to do media.
Mm.
So that's just, you know, when I was 18 and you know, picking up awards like most photogenic at my end of school prom, you know, I wasn't really trembling. It's just part of the course. We're just built different.
Do you know what award? Do you know what award I picked up when I was at university?
Do you really want me to guess that?
No, I don't. In the first year, at the end of the first year of my journalism studies at University of Sheffield, I picked up the Mouth of the Newsroom Award, which was described as that person who ensures that no one can be uncertain of their presence in and around the newsroom, which I felt was very unfair and unwarranted.
What were they saying? What was the point of the
basically a loudmouth, basically a loudmouth, blabbermouth,
class clown,
yeah, an idiot. That's basically what they were saying. I've shown them. so yeah, the awards were good. I think the timing of them is always a bit suspect, isn't it? But
it's difficult though, isn't it? Because you wrote, didn't you? You wrote it's impossible to do it after the season ends.
Yeah, good luck to you. Even if you did it the night after the end of the season. I mean, those who are in the playoffs couldn't come because they're preparing for the playoffs and there's no way the managers would let them go down to London in an alcohol-soaked environment just for the sheer risk of it. but also the unnecessary travel and staying over and not being at home. And there's no way managers would allow it. But also, any player who finished on the last day of the season, you know, they're either going on a mass trip to Vegas because they got promoted, or they're off on their jollies because they don't get a lot of time. They don't get a massive summer. Yeah, they get more annual leave than I probably get, but given what they put their bodies through, they do need a little bit of time to not run and not play football. So they take advantage of that and they head off. A lot of them, I suspect, wheel their luggage in with them to the dressing room, stow it, finish the game, get a shower, and then pick up their luggage and then go straight to the airport. That's what I reckon happens for many footballers. So you wouldn't be able to do the awards after. But doing it
reasonably before. Because, again, the same argument is, well, managers are not going to want their best players.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that are going to win awards to be in anything other than peak condition going into the final game of the season.
Exactly. But it does kind of leave a, well, what happens if Smodic scores hat-tricks in each of his last three games and Somerville doesn't score or assist and Leeds don't make the automatics and then crash out of the playoffs? It kind of puts a different slant on it, doesn't it? It puts a different slant on those awards. So basically what it says to Somerville and Gray and the players who were in the team of the season, which was Somerville, Routere and Ampadu, is that you have to now justify those places in the last three games. You know, make sure that you finish it off in a way that says to everyone, there is no argument. I was one of the best two centre-backs in the division, or I was the best number 10 in the division, or I was the best left-winger in the division. And for Archie Gray to finish off so that everyone knows definitively who the top gun is of young players in the championship.
I think you're right. A nice summary of the evening. Must be nice being a chief football writer, being invited to these sorts of things.
it was, yeah. You'd have been able to see an unnamed broadcast journalist coming under fire from photographers for unplugging their equipment and poor plugging etiquette. In his own.
Terrible etiquette.
Awful etiquette. Absolutely appalling. Honestly, they were. That was one of my highlights. The ensuing, not so passive aggressive exchange that happened. The moose like braying, I suppose you could call it. And then my other highlight was being squirreled away to the servants' quarters to eat, lest any of the footballers, you know, saw what it's like when journalists eat food. but the Thai green curry actually was delicious, so it's up there in the top five or six for press food of the season, the EFL awards. So well done.
Okie dokie. We do have one other issue to discuss, Leeds United related, before we finish this week's episode. Some news over from Norway. There was a newspaper article from over there, which said that a car registered to one of a player with Norwegian youth international caps had crashed and was basically totaled. That player was Christopher Klassen, as Leeds have since confirmed to us. He's unharmed, as far as we're aware, and was taken to hospital just, you know, for precautionary reasons, but is understood to have not suffered any injuries. What was the lowdown on that, Graham?
Well, it's just simply that the Norwegian press and the Norwegian police did not name Klassen, but it was made aware to us that that it was Klassen involved, and the car involved was his BMW that's registered to him in Norway. Essentially, just after midnight on Wednesday morning, the car crashed into a road barrier on the E6 at Berger in Lillestrøm. And the driver was not suspected of being intoxicated. The police are investigating the crash, which will essentially be, I think, to investigate whether or not the driving standards, I think ultimately will be what they're investigating. But no intoxication and mercifully no injuries, because the car was an absolute wreckage. The front of the car was just completely totaled. Very, very scary stuff. But Leeds were in contact with Klassen yesterday, and he is due back in the country, I think, today or tomorrow. and we'll get the chance to ask Daniel Farke about it in his press conference to find out if there's any update or if it impacts his availability for Borough on Monday. But yeah, quite a sobering one, and thankfully nobody at all came out of it with any injuries.
Yeah, very, very positive in that sense, but obviously a very scary situation. And, you know, people might be wondering why the players, you know, in Norway, for example, or why is someone away? But I think the players have had a few days off this week.
They had a couple of days off because they...
So Jorginho Rute was at Newmarket at the races watching Bo Pedro, his nag. That was picked up by snappers at the races as well.
Ipswich were given... Similarly, if anyone thinks this is, you know, scandalous that Leeds should take time off, Ipswich also gave their players time off. In fact, I think Ipswich maybe had one player at the awards on Sunday night because the rest were given time off. Wes Burns was up for goal. Was he up for goal of the season? He was, wasn't he?
He won goal, yeah.
He won goal, but he wasn't there because I think he's got tonsillitis. So he wasn't there. But they have been given, I think they've been given quite a few days off because they didn't play for 2 weeks because of Coventry being in the FA Cup. So it's not unusual at this stage of the season for managers to grant a couple of days off. The physicality of the season really starts to take its toll, doesn't it, in the final few games. So you want them as fresh as humanly possible. And Borough's a big old game. Big, big, big game. You reckon it'll be all right. Because you must do, because you wrote that Leeds are not going to have the problem of a low block. So therefore, Leeds victory, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I am. I'm saying Leeds victory. I'm saying 2-1.
Oh, 2-1. I'm going to say 2-0. Okay. Not having Ayling in the side, I think, will be a blow for them because he's been quite important, hasn't he?
If you are Luke Ayling, because he'll be there, he'll be in the stand, he'll be watching, who you support? The club where...
What, officially or unofficially?
No, as in this game.
That's a really good question.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Because it's a tricky one. It's
you know, the he'll, club that he's been with for near enough 10 years or 8 years.
Yeah.
It's a massive game in the grand scheme of the season, but you're not getting your contract renewed. And ultimately, you've done so well at Borough that there's a very good chance that you might get a new deal at Borough, a 1 year deal from them.
So I think you want Borough to win, and I think that's perfectly natural. I think he'll be conflicted. Mm. Would a draw help Borough out? Not really.
No, I think that their playoff hopes are pretty much done and dusted now.
Yeah, you probably want Borough to win, don't you? But you want Leeds to go on.
I think you might want Leeds to win.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
let's not forget, he was in this dressing room for the first half of the season.
Yeah, but he's also massively competitive. Every footballer wants to win everything. And yeah, he's not playing, but his team is, the team that he's not, the dressing room that he's now part of. I wouldn't at all be surprised if he's G'ing his team up massively for this game, because that's the kind of teammate he is. He's a very, very good teammate, Luke Ayling, and big character, proper football man. I think he'll want Borough to win. But him and Johnny Howson, if Leeds do win, will probably share a little like nod, like it's all right. Means they can go on and win it, which we'll be happy about. And obviously Sam Greenwood as well.
And yes, okay, not forgetting. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they'll be quite depleted, won't they? They've got lots of injuries anyway. But I do still think 2-1. I don't know who's going to score for Leeds. But I do think Emmanuel Latte-Latt will score for Borough.
Yeah, he's on fire at the minute. But he can't score in every game, so I'm going to say 2-0 to Leeds United with goals from Crescencio Somerville and Jorginho Ruter. And with those goals, Leeds will be fixed.
Like just the wave of a magic wand. yeah, that's everything from the Inside Elland Road podcast this week. We will be back after Borough, but before QPR next week in that sort of interim period between those two massive games, those two massive away fixtures. And you'll be hearing from us again next week. In the meantime, take care and bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.